Hey, welcome to Showing Up, which may be one of the more ironic things I've said out loud on this podcast since it started, because the question is, to my loyal listeners, all three of you, I won't call you out by name, where have you been? What have you been doing? And that's something that I hope we'll ask, you'll ask yourselves that as you end 2023 and consider the year 2024. Much like, is her name Marie Kondo with the cleaning up your house and organizing person? Does what you've been doing bring you joy? That is the question. And if not, why do you want to drag it into the brand new year? So we'll talk about that. My special guest is someone who's known to the program. He can be a little bit of a self-promoter, but when you ask him the right questions, he can access something of value. So I hope you will welcome back to the program me, Jerry Sander, who I'm glad to welcome. Jerry, good to see you.
Good to see you. It's nice to be back. It's nice to see that things haven't changed too much. Glad to be here.
So what happened? Where did you go? What happened to you? Was this like a Britney Spears kind of situation where someone had to take care of you and cut you off from the rest of the world in order for you to not run around with knives or something?
No.
I hope that's not too personal a question, but we're all ears. Where have you been?
No, there's been no knives. It's not a Britney Spears situation. I mean, the short version of the explanation is that I've put an intense amount of time into talking about relationships, doing boot camp relationship work in a form of therapy that I've been trained to get some good results with couples. I've specialized in working with couples. And I've done boot camps with another person from Salt Lake City. We've done boot camps all over the country, which requires a lot of time. And there's been another podcast. There's a podcast called Love Work Relationship. What is it called? Love Work Skills for a Relational Life, that I've been releasing podcasts on that once every 2 weeks. No disrespect intended for this one, but it's very hard to do everything. I'm trying to be a good person in the mix.
So if I'm hearing that correctly, you left doing a podcast with yourself to do a podcast about relationships with others.
Yeah.
With someone else.
Yeah.
But isn't our first relationship with ourselves? Why did you toss yourself overboard? As you know, there are many, many devoted listeners to this program who were left adrift, who had no clue you were going to up and run. Okay, and again, I know this may be painful, but the program's called Showing Up. You didn't show up.
Okay, I'm noticing a tendency for you to use hyperbole, what we call hyperbole, which is exaggeration. I didn't up and run from any situation. I tried to do a lot, and I apologize if anyone was waiting. And I apologize if anyone is waiting for, with, you know, on pins and needles for the next episode of Showing Up. It's hard to keep your focus on what's going on in the world, to be a good father, husband, dog owner, grandfather, citizen of the world, and also work. I have been working a lot as a therapist with couples and then endeavoring to take that to the next level. I also was teaching a class, a little mini course about relationships, and I was writing a book. I wrote a book about coming of age in Long Island in the late 60s and early 70s, and I can talk more about that or maybe even read something from it. The book is available on Amazon. It's called The Guyland by Jerry Sander, an episodic memoir. You can get it. It's available in ebook or in regular book. I don't know what you call that. Anyway.
All right.
Yeah. No. Thank you.
All right. Let's move on. Aside from not showing up, what have you been doing with your time, and why should the average person care?
I think I just answered that, what I was doing with my time.
Well, yeah.
I mean, if you... No, I don't know if you were listening.
You understand the intent behind the question.
I do, trying to
draw you out as to what could be more important than, you know... You weren't the only guest on this show. There are a lot of people out there who I found interesting to interview and spend time with. It can't be that there's no interesting people on the planet left, and you kind of ghosted us.
In fact, it was my interest in the interesting people on this planet that led me into deeper work with relationships. And I realized this was an area that I had been set up to fail at on a personal level. That's much of what I wrote the Guyland about. And I was determined to, within this lifetime, come to a better understanding of what makes relationships be successful and go from beyond being just okay, even, to thriving. And when I can do that work with someone, it's incredibly rewarding. It's something that I never expected to receive such deep rewards from in my life, and I'm doing that now. So I don't think, you know, I understand you've got a podcast to put out here, but I don't think anyone abandoned anyone, and I certainly wasn't in a situation such as Britney Spears might find herself, or Cher's son who's being... There was no crisis. There was no mental health crisis. There was no crisis of any kind. So I appreciate your concern, but that's what I've been doing, and it's been a positive in my life, but I also realized I couldn't do everything. I guess that's obvious.
So in the interim... I have been looking at your books.
Yeah.
You can find them on Amazon.
Yeah, where books are sold, yeah.
They're all different.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all different.
Thank you.
They're different.
Thank you.
But they're different from each other as well.
No, they're not the same book. They have different titles.
Are you not writing in one genre? They say to write what you know, correct? Your first book was a book about
give me a chance to
a
respond.
Girl in high school?
Yes, permission and slips, yeah.
The world of that, the second book was about a 10th grader whose math teacher goes missing.
Yes, unlimited calling, certain restrictions apply, yep.
Your third book was about the future in which... It was you'd have to tell me if that was science fiction or...
Yeah, it was
is that what you call
convergence?
It?
Convergence. Okay. It was dystopian novel, yeah.
Fiction in which the next presidential election is the last one, and the United States actually merges with a Chinese... merges with a company? The company that buys Apple?
Yeah, Mr. Wen's company.
I'm not
this
sure.
May not even
very
be fiction.
Hard book to make it past... Page 32. I could tell it was well written, but
I mean, you have to be a reader.
I don't know. And then your most recent book seems to be about real you. You call it an episodic memoir, but it stops at age 18.
That's
and
right.
Obviously, you have not stopped at age 18. What on earth is going on with this? How do you reconcile all this? How is this one person? How is this one writer? Go ahead. You got the floor.
Okay, thank you. And I stand behind Convergence, by the way. Once you get past page 32, a lot of interesting things happen. So there are many different parts of us. There are entire schools of therapy that work with kind of theoretical understandings of
parts of us. I'm thinking of internal family systems, for one. Almost every school of therapy that acknowledges the influence of the past upon the present and your family of origin has broken things down into several parts. So I would say that each of the books that I've written speaks to a certain part of my understanding of the whole, W-H-O-L-E, which is the first book, looks at the issue of meanness and hostility within a public school system or a residential treatment center, just the world that teenagers were growing up in about the year 2005. And it's in a very not sparing way that asks the reader to really roll up their sleeves and get involved with the less pleasant side of how mean things can be. And that certainly was a part of me observing, as someone who was already working as a social worker, how hard it was to help people who had been exposed to such meanness and the daily necessity of doing that. The second book, Unlimited Calling, Certain Restrictions Apply, I set out as my goal have many fewer characters, make it much easier to understand, and no real cursing, curse words, drug use, sex, all the things that were running amok in permission slips aren't really there in any significant way. And yet it's a story about looking for family and looking for connection and looking for meaning. And again, it was centered in the teen years, but once again, the adults in the book were also looking for connections and meaning, as well as family. So that spoke to me about a very personal dimension of looking for family. Ironically, when you take time off to be a writer, you're spending time away from your family. Any kind of artist does this, and that's simultaneously awful and necessary if you're going to produce something. Now, that was tough. My third book, Convergence, was simply an observation of projecting ahead, years ahead, the way things are going with the world of tech and the world of insane politics in this country. Where's it likely to go? And I saw it as going in the direction of the United States government going out of business and merging with a more efficiently run company that was foreign owned, and the guy who bought Apple in the future, and him coming up with an entire wave of people being connected all the time via the Hive and implants, much like Mr. Musk is experimenting now with monkeys, and a system gone out of control with much hacking and the growth of revolutionary movement against that, people who are anti-tech. And amongst them are the religious ones. So it was kind of a tech futuristic world gone wrong as a warning. And I wrote it during the Trump administration, I'll just say that. So that was the part of me that was probably fearful. And also the part of me that's linked into a type of I don't want to say ESP, but a certain type of prescience. My last book, The Guyland, took me years to write. It was essentially a search for understanding through several short stories about how I came to be the 18-year-old I emerged as, which it's not so easy to remember exactly what happened in third, fourth, fifth grade. It's an episodic memoir because it is a memoir, but not fully in chronological order. So it doesn't take you from year one to year 18. There are selected stories that were very true for the moments at which they were true that I believe collected almost like a photo album. And there are photos in there from my life.
add up to an understanding of the young man that would go out and face the world at age 18. And I guess that was the part of me that was still hurting and not quite integrated yet as to what happened. And one of my favorite quotes is from William Faulkner, who said, "The past isn't over. In fact, it's not even really the past." So this was dipping a toe into the past and actually getting in the above ground pool of the past and seeing what was there and how it shaped me. I hope that helps. I don't know if that means anyone wants to read these books, but they're there if you want them. So what's the point of your writing? What's the point of my writing? Is to write and give voice to a part of me that's not invited in other places. It's not clear to me if you're an optimist or if you're not an optimist.
Optimist.
You certainly can be take the easy shot now and then. You have an ear for dialogue, I grant you that. But you can be very, I don't know,
what's
sarcastic
word?
Or snarky.
No, snarky, no. I take issue with that. Observant.
And just between us,
yeah.
Sometimes readers don't like to read that kind of stuff.
They don't read some other book.
And I know Elmore Leonard gave advice to readers, to writers, to leave out the part that readers skip.
Thank you.
I'm not sure you've always done that.
Well, I'm not sure Elmore has ever done that either. And maybe he's part of him is talking to himself. You know, I'm saying these. Parts and
all right. What have you?
Yeah.
Well, first of all,
yeah.
You've done very few podcasts in the recent. Well, in 2023.
Yes.
Really, I haven't. I don't know what the number is, but you've done a slew of podcasts almost every other week for your other channel. You want to explain that one and why you're doing that?
Yeah, the other podcast, which is called LoveWorkRelationships.com. If you go to LoveWork, Essential Skills for Relational Life, you'll find it. The other one is called, if you go to podpage.com/LoveWorkRelationships/, you'll find the podcast there. So the cool thing about the podcast is that it is not speaking down to people from any kind of imagined throne of authority about relationships. I mean, one of the things I like about your podcast is its tone. It's a real life tone, and I tried to bring it to that one. And I think the idea of looking at all the different problems that can happen in relationships and speaking about it in a very down-to-earth way with both a female and a male point of view can really contribute something that's not usually there. And the subjects were a wide range of things, but tried to center on real-life things that couples encounter on a regular basis, drawing on my private practice and the podcast partner's private practice in Salt Lake City. So different parts of the country, but people are more alike than you would think.
Is that basically to help people feel bad about themselves? That I don't understand.
No, not at all.
You're saying it's love.
Love work. Work. Right. Love work relationships.
That's a hard sell.
Well, I'm not trying to sell it. It takes work to make love effective in this world.
I mean, seriously speaking, does listening to that podcast help anyone?
We've heard from people that
it... Thunder, but...
Well, thank you.
Does it?
Are you done? Yes. I believe the answer is yes. You know, it's always irked me, the Beatles song, "All You Need Is Love." You do need love, and love's a wonderful, fantastic, beautiful thing, but you also need some skills in this life to make the love effective. Most of us didn't learn those things.
And what are these teachings you do?
I've studied and become certified as...
You basically lecture?
No. I help through the boot camp... Okay.
It's hard to keep up.
How is a couple supposed to transform in 2 days?
Okay, I'm totally willing to speak about this if you listen. So right now you're in the listener role and I'm speaking. When a couple's together for 2 days, learning and discussing and role-playing and practicing skills, if it's done in a compassionate, skilled way, 7 hours a day, that can end up leaving you on the same page with a beautiful experience and a sense we can do more. But that's just the beginning, and I don't believe any workshops will ever replace the need for compassionate patient couples therapy.
Well, 7 hours a day with lunch thrown in.
Yes.
And 2 15-minute breaks. How are they going to transform?
How are they going to?
Isn't that a little naive?
No, it's not naive at all, because it's what we would call a corrective emotional experience, that when you're used to doing the same thing the same way with your partner all the time, it's easy to do the same old thing or the old same thing. This is a brand new way of experiencing your partner.
I see here, there was an article about couples therapy in the New York Times, and one couples therapist said that doing that kind of work was like trying to fly a helicopter in a hurricane.
Yeah, well said.
Is that true?
Yeah, that's very well said. People can get pretty animated and agitated.
What do you do when one half of a couple, when, let's say, the guy puts forward facts in one particular way and the partner absolutely contradicts them and recalls totally different set of facts? What do you do?
Facts are overrated. Facts are overrated. The things that people argue about sometimes are usually about feelings and experiences, not the exact facts getting them completely right. So there are times where they know what really happened. There are times where they're so upset and agitated and worked up, they don't really even remember it.
Now, I know, I think you've said last time you were on the show that you were a fan of Judge Judy.
Absolutely.
And that you admired the book that she wrote called Don't Pee on My Leg and Tell Me It's Raining.
Yeah, fine book.
Is that the kind of thing you do, only therapy version of Judge Judy?
No, absolutely.
Is that what couples therapy is?
No, it's not. That's what Judge Judy show. I like the original one, not the revamped one. And someday I'll tell you the story of being in her courtroom in Manhattan Family Court. It's not what I do. I do kind of the opposite.
All right. Well, having ditched the podcast.
This podcast?
I'd like to know your intentions for it and why you came back now.
Well, you asked
me. Just look around. The world's been going on very well without you.
Well, you invited me back.
There's peace all over the place, right?
I mean, assume you're being snarky.
The world, I don't mean to be cynical myself.
Well, the world
snarky.
Has
its problems. And
an understatement.
If anything, the world just continues spinning on its axis the same way it did before when you were doing these interviews with people. So
I'm not sure what your point
is. Are you
is.
Giving them up and
no.
want to just talk to no. yourself next year? Or what's the plan?
I would like to see this podcast interview some interesting people with some regularity, even if it was once a month or, if all else fails, once a quarter. You know, every couple of months. I think there's a place for showing up.
It's a little boring when you just speak to yourself, right? You ever see those YouTube videos of people like unpacking a Samsung phone?
Yeah.
Like the unboxing videos.
Yeah, they're memorable.
They show you what cords come with it and stuff.
Yep.
I find those like excruciatingly ridiculous, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I want to put together a compilation of an hour of unboxing videos or something. And maybe that's what I was doing with this podcast, but I don't think so, because I was interviewing very interesting people.
So explain
to me why interviewing you is in that same realm.
Well, I can't, it's not one guest versus another guest, but I don't know.
Right.
You're the one that chooses, you know?
Right.
I felt like this was the place to show up again. Uh-huh. It's showing up.
Well,
it's showing up.
I know you want to get to your book.
I do.
What the book is called? The Guyland. The Guyland.
Guyland.
One word.
Guyland. Yeah.
The Guyland.
It comes from Long Island.
Like then it the says an episodic
the
memoir.
The Guyland. Yeah.
Episodic. What is an episodic memoir?
It is one that's not exactly in chronological order exactly from the day of birth to the day of death or something. It's just kind of snippets.
I appreciate that. Let's talk about this cover, first of all.
Yeah.
The Guyland.
Yep.
It's hard to believe this is a real house. You've got a house on the cover. A small Long Island development house.
Yep.
With a big, it looks like a, what is that, a Chevy or a Plymouth in the driveway? And a very small child standing next to the car dressed up for snow.
That's me. It's me.
Is this real?
Suit. Yeah, it's me. It's me in a snowsuit.
Or if it's not, how did you stage it and why?
That is Tanglewood Drive in West Islip, and it's real. I wouldn't stage it. It's an old photo, I found.
I mean, what makes anyone write an episodic memoir? Why now? Or why?
Well, I think I've...
Whenever you did write it, do you want to say about when you wrote it and how it came to be? But I want to know why. Why bother? Who wants to read about someone else's first 18 years, unless, you know, your arm was bitten off by a shark or something.
No, that never happened to me.
That might be, you know, sell a few books.
Didn't happen to me.
But why would we read about your Long Island upbringing? I don't get it.
Well, I'm not sure many people did. Why would you want to? I don't. Are you being serious?
No, I am. I am being serious.
Because we can recognize each other and each other's experiences. I would not expect this to appeal to women, this book, but I've already heard from some women whom it appealed to, and they saw themselves in it.
Yeah.
Even though I was writing about me, this is something universal.
In what ways do you see those times when you grew up? When was it?
The 30s?
The 40s?
Not the 30s.
The 60s. Late
60s, early 70s.
How were those times different than now?
Well, I would say there's a sense of safety that doesn't feel present around us much anymore. That's the first thing that rings out at me. That's just one. It's a very big question.
I know it's a big question, but how I'm trying to keep this interesting. How were things different then than now?
Well, there was much more of a sense of family present. Didn't feel as fragmented, at least to me, even though, in fact, my family was fragmenting. The culture felt more together and uniform than the many fragmented cultures that feel all around us right now to
Are
everyone.
You one of those end-of-the-worlders that believes that... Is that what motivated you writing this now, that you want to get it down in print before...
Okay, hell no. I'm not an end-of-the-worlder. I just think things can
We're
get
all,
a little bad.
I don't know.
Things could get worse.
Is that...
It's not
no.
the end.
What do you see happening in the next few years? What do you see in the world we're leaving... your children and your grandchildren?
It's a struggle between those who are trying to make it better and even restore some of the world's natural beauty and those who don't care and are just
I'm having a
selfish.
Biscotti right now.
You're eating while I'm talking.
Sorry for the
audio. Well, it is. You can hear it, by the way. What was I saying? Battle between those who are trying to make things better and those who are trying to make-believe make it better while polluting the planet and wrecking the resources and going forward with war as a first resort all the time. I'd say that's going to be the struggle. It's going to be a struggle, no doubt. That's not the end of the world. That's an important
Have
struggle.
Have you ever considered running for office of any kind?
No. Hell no. Hard no.
I do know that, You know, it's not that you don't have good ideas, but you like to hear yourself speak. Apparently, a lot of people out there in podcast world are enamored with the sound of their own voices.
Well, you have a podcast.
And that's why they, or on YouTube, they will take the time to show you them unboxing something, because why not, right? Maybe your unboxing video would be better than the other person's unboxing video, and someone will Google it, and next thing you know, you are being seen by someone in, you know, East Tajikistan or something.
Yeah, I think you veered off topic here.
So back to you. What do you want to say? What do you want to have happen with this book?
Oh, I'd like a few people to buy a few copies.
Is there a movie in it somewhere, and who would play you?
Definitely. I'm guessing Carl Reiner, but I don't know. I would like someone much better looking. I don't know.
All right. Would you like to, let me flip through this for a second. You can keep talking. I'm looking.
Well, I hope you're going to give me a chance to read something here. And it's a little, it's not X-rated.
I got to stop you. I'm looking at the first page.
Yeah.
Names have been changed to protect the innocent and the partially innocent.
Mm-hmm.
Some memories have been enhanced and altered for the sake of larger emotional truths.
Yep, that.
What does that mean?
Are these things the
truth, or are these things contrived?
It means I didn't have an exact photographic memory, and I got the essence of the emotional realities pretty much down. And where it's altered, it's in service of the larger truth.
I presume you want to read.
Yeah, that's what
some
I'm saying.
Part of it. So yeah,
that was our agreement, wasn't it?
Well, there's a lot of pictures of you in here.
Well, who else? Okay.
Huh.
It's a book about
black
me.
And white.
Yep.
Interesting. All right. I'm going to. Is there some part that you'd like to read and share with the reader? This book is available on Amazon and anywhere, I believe, you buy books, but mostly Amazon. It's called The Guyland by Jerry Sander, 2022. It came out last year.
Yeah.
By the Way It Works Press. Okay. And you can find it on Amazon. Go ahead. I'll be quiet. You read something, and we'll talk about it after.
All right.
All yours.
I'm going to read a bit from page 95 from the short story called Above Ground Pool. It's opposite a picture of me in one of my favorite paisley shirts of the day. So this would have been around biology class. I'll just leap in here. The tangy, sharp ultra vinegar smack in the face smell of formaldehyde filled the room, replacing my personal cloud of Jade East aftershave. I'd worn the Jade East every day of school since eighth grade. Once I started making my own sandwiches, I could taste it on the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches 5 hours later, because I always made sandwiches after slapping Jade East onto my face. I guess it didn't wash off easily. Mr. Stedman stood in front of the tall lab counter in the front of the room, black plastic trays with dead frogs in front of him. Each one was laid on his back, hands up next to the head in green, dead, total surrender. Each one of you will get a knife. You are responsible for this knife. It is your knife for 45 minutes. It will be turned in at the end of the period. Failure to hand it in back when I collect them will result in a failing grade for the semester, a trip to Mr. Tuffin's office, and a call home, without exception. Handing a sharp X-Acto knife to laughing ninth graders didn't strike me as a good idea in the best of times. 9 months in high school hadn't proven more fun than junior high. teacher warnings about not being able to get away with last year's immature behaviors, forgetting homework, arriving late to class, or flicking a classmate on their ear quickly when no one was looking, were turning out to be true. We spent most of the year trying to invent new immature behaviors. I wish the high school yearbook photographer had been there to get a picture of Mr. Stedman in front of the corpses and trays, hands on hips, his concerned, "Don't try to get over on me," look, without success to convince us he was some sort of tough guy. He always wore short-sleeved dress shirts that looked like his mother had picked them out for him and bought them 10 at a time in slightly different colors, all of them a variation on neutral. Not only was Mr. Stedman not a tough guy, he was notoriously the opposite, the guy who drank a beaker of chemical poisons in front of last year's chemistry class the day after Valentine's Day, had done months in a mental hospital, and come back to be reassigned to the ninth grade, dead frogs replacing chemical temptations. Kids said that he, in fact, still lived at home with his parents, had no wife, and no one knew of him ever having had a girlfriend. "Come up to get your specimen, single file, please." I waited in line behind Kitty Colucci. I could usually smell either her herbal essence hair shampoo or some bodily spray from a few feet away, but now all I could smell was well-preserved amphibian flesh. I stared at the frog. I didn't want to be there, knife in hand, any more than it wanted to be dead on its back in a tray. "Those of you who requested fetal pigs, please step out of line, form a separate single file line, and come get your specimen," Mr. Stedman announced. All right, that's a good place for me to stop. What do you hope people will take from this book? Is there going to be a part two?
No, too complicated. I hope it puts a smile on people's face, and they recall some of their own time of life before you were an adult and recall it with some compassion, as well as there's inevitably some sadness anytime you're looking back that direction. So I hope it gives permission to feel the fullness of the reaction to your own life. That's what I would like.
So there's a lot of old time retro sexist thinking in this book.
Well, I don't know if I call it that.
Why did you include that? Why didn't you get rid of it? And why is the language so darn explicit?
Well, I've never, with the exception of my second book, which I set out to really filter the language, I've always loved how words connote things. And these were retro sexist times and that I was growing up in. And
is this book for guys only?
No.
I mean, you didn't call it the guys and girls land.
Yeah, I couldn't write a memoir about growing up as a female on Long Island because that would have been a crazy stretch. I already wrote two books with female protagonists, which I liked.
All right, well, very good. What are you writing now?
Right now, I'm writing something.
Are you writing now?
Yeah, thank you.
Where do you find the time to write?
Okay. I have to create the time to do it. And right now, I'm writing something at trying to get the zeitgeist of the time about the internet. It's a semi-comic
thing. I've heard the other podcasts.
Yep.
And you do a good job, but people wouldn't know that you have this side of you, I don't think, this playful side. Maybe they would. I don't know what they know. But do you feel like you're two different people? Or you're the same person? Do you want people who know you as the therapist listening to this podcast or not? And we'll keep it on the down low. I don't think you have any worries of this blowing up and getting too big. So
thank you.
Maybe just the crew of people who listen will listen. You have any parting words of wisdom for us as we bring ourselves into 2024?
Yeah, be yourself. Be the one unique, playful, thoughtful, soulful you. And then reach out from that place to someone you love and let them know how important they are to you every day.
I see. All right. Well, I hope we can get you to come back at least a couple of times. It would seem that plans for this podcast is going to be finding some interesting people to speak with again and doing this with a greater frequency than was done in 2023. And that might be once a month, which would be much far greater accountability than we've seen happen this past
year.
That's
very kind of you.
So if you are listening, we hope you found something in here worthy. And we send out our fondest wishes for you to have the best version of yourself emerge and for you to put that person in a warm embrace and say, I accept all of you. Mm-hmm. And have the best year imaginable, beyond what you can imagine, actually. So, Jerry, thank you.
You're welcome.
I put my arms around you and embrace all of us as you and me. And, you know, there's just one person here.
Yeah.
And it's good to be back.
Yeah.
Feel the same, brother. We'll see you next time for showing up.